Okay, we didn't finish the cultivation of virtues, which is the kind of the preface or the overview for the second half of the book about virtues. First half is about passions, second half is about virtues. And so we're on page 159, and Elder Paisios is talking about what's necessary in order for us to make progress. Progress in what? Progress in the cultivation of virtues. We have to cultivate our virtues. If we're going to make progress, top of page 159, we have to acknowledge, he says, it means to admit or to recognize that we have passions. We can't just say, well, this is the way I am. This is my personality. We have to realize that we have passions, passions that move us around and cause us to do things that we almost really never made a choice to do. Things like anger, which can come upon us all of a sudden. So we have to work on those passions and make an effort to cut them off, to sever them, he says, like with a knife. Cut them off away from us. Trim these limbs that poke out from us. We also have to recognize the gifts that God has given us and cultivate them. So we have to work against the passions and cultivate the gifts. If a person cultivates these gifts humbly, remember that Elder Paisios says that there's a certain number of gifts. Remember, how did he say that? Sure, that was your point that you made.
Yeah, he said that everybody had some natural virtues.
Some natural virtues.
We should start working
on them. That's the place to start. If he cultivates the natural virtues, in other words, he's saying, that God has given us, we will quickly become spiritually enriched. Not just the natural virtues, but all of the virtues that we're working on. So it takes spiritual work. It takes spiritual effort. This is how God has created us. He hasn't created us to live like animals and just live according to instinct, guided by our personality. Even animals have personality. Our cats, I don't think we've ever had a cat that didn't have a personality that was different from every other cat we've had. Cats have personalities. Dogs have personalities. What were we going to say?
Dogs. I was going to mention dogs.
Dogs too. I think other animals have personalities even. And so people have personalities too. Personalities, we're born with personalities. We have to work on our spiritual habits, strengthen our virtues. Okay, if when one works spiritually, he becomes good. If a person neglects working on his spiritual life, virtues will slide down. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this business of character and virtue, and it makes use of something that Elder Paisios said. So I want to make, anybody recognize this?
A diagram.
What kind of diagram?
Venn diagram.
Venn diagram, right. And you use a Venn diagram to show how things overlap. So there is a way in which personality and character overlap, I think. And maybe this place where they overlap is the place where you find the natural virtues. That makes sense to me. So just if we're just trying to get by with our personality, we will have a certain number of natural virtues. But we have to work on those and move into the area of habits, the development of virtues that are as a result of work. Okay? And then another thing that makes good sense with all of the things that I've read, putting things together, is that our character will show itself to others by way of our personality, which I think is really interesting. Hmm. What do people think about that? Does that make any
sense?
Does it? Everybody might not agree. But... Okay, Elder Paisios says that he has seen souls whose field, although very fertile, now Elder Paisios, he can see the soul of a person, because he is the kind of spiritual man that he is. It's a rare gift. We don't all have it. He mentions a gift later on that people who don't work on their spiritual life have. know, later on. But this is a rare gift that he has. And he says, I have seen souls whose field, although very fertile, it, you know, it has lots of nutrients and lots of, it's good soil, you know, a lot of good virtues can develop in it. Although it was very fertile in the field inside of a person, the spiritual field inside of a person, it could be filled with briars and thistles because they'd left it uncultivated, like we were talking about our garden last week. If you have, we keep putting good mulch and fertilizer into our garden, and we have the best weeds in the neighborhood. Nobody has weeds as good as our weeds because, well, we're not intentionally cultivating those weeds, but we sometimes don't work as hard on cultivating the vegetables either. So anyway, that's what happens. What's that?
Especially this year.
Especially this. This has been a bad year. It has, you know. But we've had some magnificent weeds. I have seen other souls with their field filled with thistles and briars who, because they uprooted these useless plants and cultivated the field, made it become very fertile. Of what benefit is it to us if God has given us a fertile field and we have allowed it to become dense undergrowth? If our field is suitable for cultivating one thing, one crop, sugarcane, or might be suitable for cultivating kindness. If our field is suitable for cultivating the virtue of kindness, but we're content with the reeds and the weeds that sprout, and we don't take care to uproot them in order to plant a useful crop, what can God do with us? So we have a responsibility. God is not going to hand a complete set of virtues to us, and it isn't just a matter of I will use my will and try as hard as I possibly can to follow the rules. That's not it. We are free. God will not force us to be good. We choose to cultivate, to work at becoming more and more what we can be. If we don't work at it, we just slide downhill. You know, as he says, if we're negligent, we become evil. God will ask each of us whether we have doubled the talent that he has given us. This is where the talents are. Okay. We're expected to double them. If we're given four, he wants to see eight, because it's our freedom, our activity, how we spend our life to double those talents. And those talents that we're talking about, if we're talking about spiritual life, so these natural virtues, it seems to me, would be good candidates to be identified as talents. If one has received five talents, he must make them 10. Making them 9 will not receive a grade of excellence. This is why, as much as one can, you get a B+, maybe. This is why, as much as one can, he must struggle humbly and with discernment in order to achieve excellence. Discernment is a difficult word, but discernment is being able to tell the difference between something that feels good and sounds good and looks good on the one hand, or the other possibility is that it actually is good, that it's morally good and spiritually good for us and good for others, but something might seem like it's good and it might be selfish and it might cause pain and agony to other people. And if we do things like that and choose to do things like that, then we are not cultivating virtue. We're letting things slide. People have a sense of, when I just let things slide, that's who I really am. That's the real me. This is not the truth. God didn't create anybody like that. He created people who have to make an effort in order to be true to themselves as he created us and true to God. This is why, as much as one can, he must struggle humbly as opposed to pridefully. Pride feels good, but humility gets better vegetables, better virtues. In order to achieve excellence, because God will ask if the one talent became 2, if the 2 became 4, the 5 became 10. If he gives us one talent and we end up with 2, then we've doubled it, just as the same as someone who has given 5 talents, 5 virtues, has doubled them and made them into 10. So the person who has 1 is only given 1 talent. Instead of despairing, say, well, I'm not much good, I do have this one thing that I'm good at, you double it, you've doubled it, just like the person who was given 4 doubled it and had 8. It follows that God will give us a grade of excellence if we double all of our talents. And if one turns his one talent into 10, not out of egoism, but out of philotimon, then this moves not only God, but even those who have a heart of stone. Okay, now the boys are not familiar with the difference between egoism and philotimon, so I'm going to ask somebody else to explain the difference. Now, we've talked about philotimon a lot, so we should be able to do that. You know, people who have been here. Sharon and Steve. You can help each other. Philotimon, what is it?
I know it's, I see a word excellence. That seems similar.
It's not excellence.
It's not, let's see.
Philotimon. No footnote either, I noticed.
Okay.
Okay.
When I think of philotimon, it means being in a good spirit, being open to other people, being gracious and giving to other people.
No. That's not it. It has a much more specific meaning than that.
Emptying of yourself.
Well, that's another word.
Well,
it's a good word, but it's a, you know, self-emptying is not philotimon. Is it?
Honor?
Well, there is an aspect, honor. That is more or less at the center of it. Honor. And of course, the thing was that back in ancient Greek times, when there were Homer's stories about the heroes, Achilles, and the wars and all of that, and Thor is Scandinavian, but let's see, who's the equivalent of Thor in Greek? Zeus, and you know, the other like heroic gods. And that was the religion of the pagan Greeks, you know. And they would model themselves after heroic gods, small g, and tried to have the virtues that those gods had. And they had, in ancient Greece at that time, this idea of philotimon. It was the idea of honor, but it was the honor of the warrior, the values the warrior class had, like knights in the Middle Ages. It was that kind of thing. But when the Greeks became Christians, there was a different kind of honor. That's the thing. There is a natural honor, and it builds up ego and pride. Well, this is not Christianity. Christ is not filled with pride, but there is an honor that has to do with being faithful to Christ. Now, if you're an ancient Greek warrior, you're faithful to your commander, Agamemnon, and you go out and you fight against Hector in Troy for this battle. If you're Achilles and you have this wonderful shield and this godlike character. But there's a different kind of character that Christians have, different kind of honor, because it reveals that God is not like those ancient Greek gods. God is not a God that controls us. He's not a God that forces us. He's a God that reveals what is good and reminds us, because once we've fallen away from him, we tend to forget. We won't talk about the fall because it takes too long to do that. But there is a way that human beings are supposed to be. We are supposed to be as God is. And when the Son of God becomes incarnate, Jesus, the Christ, reveals to us what God is like, but at the same time, he reveals what human beings are meant to be like. We're meant to be like God, right? But if you have this old pagan idea that God is the one at the top, and the one is he's the one with absolute power, and he's the one that can force anyone to do his will, and he's the one that sends thunderbolts and all that sort of thing, and you know, is terrifying and scary because of what he can do to us, like one of the old Greek gods, that's not how God is. Come to find out, God is humble. God is like Jesus Christ. He is meek. Meek. We don't understand meekness. We have the idea that if somebody is meek, that means I get to take advantage of him because I can be like a bully and I can win out like those old Greek gods and the Greek heroes. So when it comes to philotimon, the Greeks, when they became Christians, realized that there is an honor in being like Christ. There is an honor in being faithful to God. It's like we were saying last week, love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, and your neighbor as yourself. That's how Christ is, that's how God is, and when we keep our honor as Christians, we are like that too. We are faithful to that. We follow not just the Ten Commandments, things God tells us not to do, but we follow the Beatitudes, you know. We learn to love as God loves us. And there is an honor in not betraying that. There's an honor in not betraying Christ and going in the wrong direction, becoming more and more like Satan instead of more and more like Christ. But it takes effort. It takes sacrifice, just like it did with the ancient warriors. It takes courage to have philotimo, to keep our sense of honor, spiritual honor. So that's what I would call it, spiritual, Christ-like honor. That would be my short definition of philotimo. Okay, and the opposite is that we could double our talents out of egoism. So we have talents, we have abilities. We could just push other people around, intimidate them, scare them, and use our abilities to become even more powerful by using the talents that God gave us. The result is that our ego, our love of ourselves, our not caring about other people will be built, will be strengthened. So it's a matter of strengthening your ego and just treating other people like they just didn't matter, or being like Christ. That's philotimo. That's what he's talking about. If one turns his one talent into 10, not out of egoism, but out of philotimo, this moves not only God, but even those who have a heart of stone. Why? Because it's difficult. Because it requires what we'll talk about in the next first chapter. It's the first chapter in the new half of the book. It requires humility. And everybody knows how difficult humility is. So when we see somebody who turns his one talent into 10, not out of egoism, but out of philotimo, in a good spiritual way, people will be impressed with that person because that person will be Christ-like. You know? So that's what he's talking about. So what's philotimo? Spiritual honor. A sense of spiritual honor and faithfulness. Okay, page 160. The virtue of others perfumes us. It's like incense. When we're with a virtuous person, it becomes easier to not be bad. It becomes easier not to follow our vices, is what he's saying. We enjoy being with someone who is a virtuous person. Yolanda, now this is a nun, asking Elder Paisios a question. She calls him Yolanda, means elder. Elder, what helps in acquiring a certain virtue? And Elder Paisios answers, keeping company with someone who has that specific virtue. If you keep company with someone who has devotion, devotion to Christ, devotion to God, you too will gradually be able to acquire devotion. The same thing happens with all the virtues, because the virtue of others perfumes us as well. So we kind of smell the scent of whatever that virtue is, and we're drawn to it. It's a good smelling virtue, and we want to try to live like that ourselves. When we try to emulate, what's emulate mean?
Copy.
Right, emulate. When we try to copy the virtues of others by mirroring them in our own self, we see somebody else doing something, it's like a mirror. We try to do the same thing that we see in the mirror. We edify ourselves. Edify, what's edify mean?
Make ourselves better.
Yeah.
Educate ourselves a little
bit. Lift ourselves up spiritually. Yeah. Enlighten. We enlighten ourselves, become better. But even when we mirror their shortcomings, we are again helped because their shortcomings help us to recognize our own. We see shortcomings in others and we can say, hey, I have that shortcoming. The thing that I can see that is not good about this person, I can see that that is the same thing with me. And then we can try to not follow that shortcoming, that vice. Upon seeing the virtue of another, I am encouraged, motivated to struggle and to imitate it. His shortcoming, likewise, in the same way, encourages me to consider if perhaps I also have this shortcoming and to what extent, so that I may struggle to uproot it. So if we see a weed in this other person's garden, we can, yes, I recognize that weed and I need to pull it out. I'm going to skip down. If I see only my own virtues, but see only shortcomings in others, while overlooking my own shortcomings, or justify my shortcomings. Justify, what do we do when we justify shortcomings?
Excuse them.
Excuse them, defend them, say that they're not so bad, give reason to, hey, everybody's like this, it's not that big a deal.
I had to do it this way because of that.
Because of what?
Because of something else that made me do it.
Yeah, there was something that forced me to do this, it's not my fault, I'm not responsible. We are responsible. We're free, we can choose what to do. And then we justify, make ourselves feel better by saying, I'm better than this person, at least. And I'm better than that person and the other person. So I may have this one shortcoming, something that I do that I ought not to do, but I'm better than all these other people. And Elder Paisio says that if this is the way we think, then we're sunk. Any spiritual effort just goes out the window. Other people are our mirrors, he says. It's in others that we are mirrored and see our own self. Now this is useful, a useful way of looking at others. What we unfortunately do most of the time is we look at other people and say, boy, this person is really did this wrong or did that wrong. And, you know, he has a different way of using the fact that we can see shortcomings in others. It's others who see the smudges in us as well. So we can see other people's things that are not right with them, but others can see the dirt, the smudges in us, and they can help us by letting us know where we should wash ourselves. If I have a big spot on my back because I fell in the dirt, somebody else can see it, but I can't see it unless I look in a mirror. And he's saying that we can use other people as mirrors to find our own faults. That's not usually what we want to do. But if we want to strengthen ourselves spiritually, this is how we can do it. Top of page 161, Yoronda, what are saints like? He says, what are their attributes? The attributes of something are the qualities that we can see about it. The attributes of this cup are that it is red, it falls over easy, you squeeze it and the water goes up there, so it's soft. What other attributes does that, huh?
It's flexible.
It's flexible, right, those are attributes. So how about saints? What are the qualities that saints have? Love, humility, simplicity, and discernment. Humility, simplicity, discernment, and love. If one forcibly uses discernment, that is, if we make an effort to see how things really are, which we have to do, if we don't make any effort, we will not see how things really are in ourselves. And we, when we look at others, we'll just say bad things about them, you know, see all the things about them that we can think of as not being up to what it should be or that aren't as good as we are. But there's another way of doing things, and he's teaching us about it. We can use discernment. Discernment means that we don't just see the qualities that other people have. We recognize the qualities they have. They may be good, they may be bad, and we use them as mirrors to see into ourselves and to build up the things that need to be strengthened and to deal with the things that need to be rejected in ourselves. And if we do this, we can become saints. We can become like the saints. If we use discernment in order to imitate the life of the saints, that person can become a saint. How does that work? I mean, I just read it the way he said it. Can somebody explain to me how that works? In order to use discernment instead of, let's say, condemning people, saying, well, they're not this, they're not that. Well, how is that different from discernment? There's something else that has to happen in order to follow Elder Paisios' advice and use our ability to see how other people are to our spiritual benefit.
They have to have an image of God.
So there's the philotimo, the loyalty and faithfulness to Christ. If we're not just comparing that person and me, but we're always thinking about how we are meant to be, how Christ is, and we want to be like Christ, we may see that other people are not Christ-like. But instead of condemning them, which is pointless, is not going to help us any, and we're not like Christ either, just like they aren't, in order for discernment to work, we have to be guided by a commitment to wanting to be like Christ. Otherwise, discernment's not possible. So if we're condemning people, we don't need the help from Christ to do that. We can do that all by ourselves. We can turn our backs on God, forget about Christ, and just condemn other people for not being as good as we are. But if we're going to use discernment, what I'm thinking is that there's something that has to be there that isn't there when we just condemn other people. And what I think needs to be there is that we have to have a sense of spiritual honor. Not to condemn, but to want to, like if you're in, if you're in football and you're in the army and you're helping your teammates to be better, you can see that they didn't do something as well as it could be done. And you could point it out to them and help them to try to do it for the sake of the team or the things that you do yourself. You do not just to show off, but you focus on the things that you do well and make sure that they work for the team. Same thing in the service. This is how the service works. It's got to. If it doesn't, you lose the battle. You lose the game. People have to work together. It's the same in spiritual life. So Elder Paisios is talking about a way of working in spiritual life that isn't just a matter of me trying to be good. It involves other people. People who are saintly and are good examples, and people who are not such good examples. Both of them can help us. So there has to be this ideal, you know, of what it's like, what we are meant to be like. We are meant to be Christ-like. We are all meant to be the best players that we could possibly be, whatever our talents and abilities happen to be. Discernment can only happen when all those things are going on, because you're looking for things that will be helpful. Helpful in my spiritual effort, and helpful for the team, and loyal to the head of the team, Christ. That's what makes discernment possible. So I would say Philotimo makes discernment possible. That's one way of putting it, at least, I think. Okay, this is good. We can be greatly helped in our labor, our effort, to gain the virtues, if we have saints as examples of holiness. By comparing ourselves with the saints, we recognize our passions. Now, a lot of people would just say, by comparing ourselves to the saints, I see the saints, this saint is like Elder Paisios himself, so great, so wonderful, it's amazing. I got to go over to Mount Athos a couple years ago and to go to the place where he lived. It's incredible to be in the place where a saint like this lived. But we can think so highly of a saint that we just feel like, well, I can never be like that. I can never be like that. So they're not an example for us anymore. We're not going to make an effort. The saint is way up there. I'm just me. And the fact that Elder Paisios became Elder Paisios by doing exactly the same kinds of things that we can choose to do ourselves, we forget about that. We make them into some kind of a distant saint that it just blows us away to think about them. And then we turn around and we live in a way that is not like Elder Paisios at all. And we might even feel okay about it because at least we admire Elder Paisios, but in a way that doesn't change us. And Elder Paisios himself is saying that the saints help us in our labor to gain the virtues because they are examples of holiness. By comparing ourselves with the saints, instead of just saying, I'll never be like that, we can see our passions. We can see our passions dealt with the way the saint deals with them, because he rejects them. He censures, is the word that Elder Paisios uses. Our passions are censured. We reject our passions because we admire the good way that the saint is, and we are humbled. We're humbled. Now, we might think we're being humble if we put the saint up on a pedestal and don't even think that the way the saint is or how the saint became a saint has anything to do with us. That's not humility. It's actually pride, although it's kind of difficult to explain how it is pride. It's pride because I'm going to just continue to be the way I am. And the saint is up there and I'm me, so this is it. Nothing I can do about it. So, okay, our passions are rejected, condemned. We are humbled, not trying to build ourselves up by pride, which never works in a positive spiritual way. Pride never helps us. And then with philotimo, with the love of being holy like Christ and knowing that we can be holy like Christ, and with divine zeal, that means that zeal, okay, what's zeal? Divine zeal. What would zeal be in a football game?
Fired up is the word they use.
Fired up is the excellent word. Being divinely fired up, perfect. With philotimo and being divinely fired up, we struggle to imitate them. And what's going to happen? We are human beings. We are going to be able to be more like them. Because we're human beings, and that's what human beings are for. Human beings are to be holy. And all of us have abilities that are meant to enable us to become holy. Everyone has them. It's not just saints that have them. That's just not the way it is. Okay. We have no excuse for not making progress because we have the example and the instructions of the saints, like this book, for example, and their lives, their holy example. All of the saints are children of God who help us. Afflicted children. What is afflicted?
Wounded.
Wounded? Having problems? There are always problems, afflictions. All the saints are children of God who help us, afflicted children of God. So we're meant to be children of God. We are children of God, but there are a lot of things that get in the way. Mostly, they're not virtues. The virtues don't get in the way, they help. Vices get in the way. First half of the book was about vices. Anger, envy, what other? Pride, sorrow. Just being miserable because, oh, woe is me, things are so bad, I'm so tired of this, you know, I just can't deal with it anymore. That's an affliction. So we are children of God, we're meant to be like Christ, but we have all these afflictions. The saints are children of God who help us, afflicted children of God, that we are by showing us how we can be delivered from the wiliness of the cunning devil, who will encourage us to fall into despair because of all the bad things that happened. I have to admit, I had some bouts of that. Sharon can verify that. How am I ever going to get out of this hole? By studying the lives of the saints, our soul is warmed and we are motivated. We are given encouragement to imitate them and proceed with manly courage in the struggle to acquire the virtues. If we don't do that, we will not acquire the virtues. We will not become strong and able to deal with the difficulties of life. We realize all the saints had the same type of spiritual madness. What is he talking about, spiritual madness? Now, we've read books, some of us who are here, about half of us maybe, where it talked about spiritual madness. What does he mean by spiritual madness? I don't see how you could talk about this without mentioning Dee Panic. What was the title of her book?
God's Path to Sanity.
God's Path to Sanity. So, what is a person like if they have sanity? They are calm. They are not moved by afflictions, by bad things happening over and over again. They just ride out the storm. They don't respond when other people say bad things to them. They don't respond in anger and then get all upset and then fall into despair. Because that condition, according to the spiritual teachers, the Orthodox spiritual tradition, is a kind of madness. It's not normal. The understanding of normal is not the same as what people think it is in the world outside. People think it's normal to be at the mercy of your passions and desires and moved around by them. People think it's normal to think, these are my passions, my desires, and I want to fulfill them. I want all of whatever it is we want. I want, and I want it every day, and I don't want to have to wait. And everybody's like that, and that's normal. What's being said here is that is not normal. That's nuts. trying to live like that, you're going to be miserable. You're going to end up not liking yourself, not liking other people, not enjoying life. And the problem is that you are spiritually unbalanced. It's a kind of spiritual madness to be like that. And we don't have to be like that. We can be spiritually solid and strong and sane. But spiritual sanity is what all of this spiritual advice is about. Okay. All the saints, to begin with, had the same type of spiritual madness. There's something that I often have told people when they come to confession, and that is this, that every thief is like every other thief. Every murderer is like every other murderer. Every person that does something evil becomes like every other person who has done that evil thing. Now, in the movies, where they're looking for dramatic action, the characters in the movies are all doing things that they ought not to do. And it makes them seem unique. But in real life, it's just the opposite. In real life, if you do something that is wrong or is evil, you will be like every other person who has ever done that wrong or evil thing. That's the way it actually is in reality. You know, because it's real life. It's not a dramatic movie. It's real life. And doing things that are wrong and evil have consequences inside of us and mess us up and have this spiritual unbalance and madness. So he's saying that all of the saints started out being unbalanced like that, except each one was different. We're all different. We all have to struggle with a different set of things that want to force us into a bad direction. Okay, we can see this love that saints had for God, that philotimo that makes them want to be like Christ, want to be well-balanced and strong and courageous and able to deal with things. And that kindles, it's like you have a fire. You kindle a fire, you start out with little sticks, put the bigger sticks on top of it, light the match, the big sticks start to get caught. So he's talking about kindling divine zeal, getting fired up. How do you get fired up? You start with the little pieces, light those, and the rest, and there's a blaze. Then this is a blaze of spiritual strength, courage, philotimo. It kindles a divine fire in us to imitate the saints. And if we make that effort, we will become like them. We will. Any of us, all of us, because we're human beings. And that's what human beings are meant to do. It's what we're for. It's the meaning of life, really. We can talk about this if you want. You don't have to just listen to me. What kind of sense does, do you believe me? Is it true? Think it's not true? It's better just to slide into despair? We don't have to make any effort. There's that.
So if every person that commits the offense is like every other person that does the same, what about every person that has a certain virtue? Are they like every other person that has that virtue?
I think that the way it works is that saints are more unique. Each one is different. Then that's why people are kind of, we don't have any choice in a way. We are all different. We do all have different personalities. We have different abilities, shortcomings, the way we're put together. We all look different. It's amazing when you think about it. I mean, it's very, very seldom you see somebody who even looks like somebody else. Every once in a while you run into somebody. Say, oh, that person really looks like, you know, I don't know, Clint Eastwood, you know, but I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but you know, especially at his age, he's kind of looking pretty rough. But there was a time when it was a good thing, long ago, at any rate. But how is it that everybody who's born looks different than everybody else? It's amazing. We are really all different. And the saints, they're not like each other. Each one is different. Each one was this particular unique person with their own personality, and the goodness of that person reveals something holy in a way that could only have been revealed by that person. Father Thomas Hopko used to say, and he was speculating, this is speculation. I try to avoid speculation in general, but this is Father Tom, so it's better at speculation than me, knew a lot more stuff than I did. He said, maybe, maybe the end of time will come when every possible person that could be has been born.
I remember hearing it, yeah.
Makes sense.
In a podcast. But.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember hearing him say it in class. But, but everybody is different. But if we do things that are wrong and evil, we lose the difference. It makes us just like every other person that's done that. The funny thing is, emotionally, because it's me doing it, it feels different. Because I'm not experiencing anybody else but me when I do something that's wrong. So it's like I'm the only person that exists. We forget about anybody else. Whenever we do something that's wrong, we forget about God, we forget about other people. We don't care about what happens to other people as a result of our having done whatever it is that we've done. Theft or murder or violence of some kind. It cuts us off from other people. And every person who does that is the same. People come back from war and they feel isolated. Why should they feel isolated? They were all in a war, all involved in doing violence. And yet they come back feeling like they're cut off from everybody. They can't find any comfort except with other people who at least understand their loneliness and their misery and their shock at having seen the things they've seen and done the things they've done. It isolates them. Violence does that. Now, make-believe violence on the screen, it's just appearance. It's just appearance. It's entertainment.
Makes us think that they're strong.
We feel strong watching the things that are going on. But in real life, it takes a toll. It cuts out our soul. It damages us. You know, so that's evil. You know, experience of evil. Even if we send people to war and they have to do evil things, there's a reason. But they're still evil things. You know. So evil robs us of our freedom, it robs us of who we are, we forget who we are, we become confused, there's chaos inside of us, and that's always the same. Now, if we're experiencing it, I'm saying is because if we're experiencing it, we are completely alone. And that feels like uniqueness, but it isn't. We've lost our uniqueness, that's what I'm trying to say. Does this make sense to people? Have anybody experienced this? That's the reality of things, as compared to a fiction, a movie. Fiction, movie, real life, very different. Fantasy's a real problem today. We live a fantasy life. We believe in fantasies. Spiritual life, the teachings of the Orthodox Christian Church are about reality. They're not a fantasy. They help us to deal with reality. And that's what Elder Paisios is helping us to do. Elder Paisios encourages the nun who asks him about reading the lives of the saints. How many years should we read these stories about the lives of the saints? Throughout life. It's never enough. What we can get from reading the lives of saints, how other people have become saints, is not just a historical story of the lives of the saints, but overflows that. It's like a flood of meaning. There's more meaning than just the story. He says, it's not just the historical story, it's the overflow, the meaning of their lives. So instead of despair and evil, you have greater meaning. That's open to us, it's possible to us. We have to work for it. It doesn't come all by itself. But we can see in the lives of saints that that is the way things work out. Yolanda, I find it difficult to do some of the things the saints did. Take, for example, Saint Synclitici, who practiced great asceticism. Asceticism means really making a spiritual effort every day to the end of her life. Even though she went through a painful illness. Or Saint Bonifacius, who kept total silence for so many years, a real spiritual effort. Now these are spiritual efforts that saints who are monks are famous for. our spiritual effort in the world is mainly to put up with each other. Mainly to learn how to love other people instead of loving ourselves. There's plenty of spiritual effort, you know, for that. Our spiritual effort has to do with one another, I think, more than anything else. So she says, I can't be like these saints. All right, if you want to imitate Saint Bonifacius, then at least try to keep silent when somebody says a nasty thing to you, a critical remark cutting you down, and you maintain silence then. Not for your rest of your life, but just when somebody says something nasty. As for Saint Synclitike, I see that you can't physically struggle the way she did because your body won't take it. But I think you can imitate her, and there is work for you to do. And he says, I pray that Saint Synclitike will grant you some of the many virtues that she had. So there are ways to imitate the saints, not by doing exactly as they did, but by finding ways to apply the things that they did in our actual lives. We have to make an effort to do these things. The next paragraph, there's a heading, we should polish our virtue. And Elder Paisios comes up with something really different here. Yolanda, sometimes you speak of a toxic virtue. Toxic, what does it mean? Toxic.
Poison.
Poison. How could a virtue be poisonous? When is a virtue toxic? An example of a toxic virtue is goodness when it's an excuse for people's approval. When we try to do good so that people will approve of us. Well, that's not going to benefit us spiritually because we're just looking for the approval of other people. It doesn't change us spiritually because we're doing the same thing that we're supposed to be trying not to do. Try to show off. It's about ego. It's about being concerned about what other people think about us. Angry when they think badly of us. Only happy when they think good about us. And so we do something good so that somebody will think highly of us. That's showing off. This is a toxic virtue. We did a good thing, but it hurt us spiritually instead of helping us.
Yes, that's why they say don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing.
That's one reason, yeah.
Don't publish what you've done.
This is about motives. This is about why did we do it? Did we do it for the approval of other people, or did we do it in order to keep faith with Christ out of Philotima, of that high spiritual honor, which is difficult. When our motives, the reason we do things, are not pure, and we put ourself into our virtue, we put poison into the virtue. We add a drop of poison into the virtue. The top of 163, and after that, our virtue is like an unripe fruit, which has some vitamins, but is still sour. We had a whole bowl of golden delicious apples. Most of them were green, sour. But every day I would come and I would try to find the yellowest one. Every one of them was good. There's three green ones left. I don't think there's any hope for them. So you're gonna have to eat those.
It's only two.
Only two, did you eat one of them?
No.
Okay, see how well I did. So an unripe fruit has some vitamins. Those apples were probably, I ate a green one, it was awful. That was the first one I ate. After that, I got smart, looking for the yellow ones. You know, look for the yellow ones. So it's got vitamins in it, but it's sour. So this is how he's saying it's like when we do something that is good, but we do it for the wrong reason. We might get approval for doing it. Somebody say, well, that's really good you did that. But, and we'll say, then we'll build our pride. This is no point in that. Yolanda, is it possible for me to have no virtue and for others to consider me virtuous? The bad thing is for you to consider yourself virtuous, so don't worry about what they think. Yolanda, is it possible that I might not be aware of my real spiritual state and imagine that I have virtue? It is possible, but if you pay attention, you will see that you do not have an inner sweetness, you know, an inner sourness, maybe. In which case, you will understand where you stand spiritually. So we can know how things are inside of us if we want to know, instead of making excuses and not wanting to know. If that's what we do, then we can. Okay. Getting tired of talking here. I'm going to stop right here and ask somebody else to reflect on these things and talk about them. I'm going to drink some water. We might even not get to the end of the chapter. We only have 5 minutes left here. I thought we'd at least finish the chapter. It's a good chapter. So, how's our ripening been doing lately? Are we ripening? Becoming sweeter?
Probably not.
I haven't been too sweet lately. She's remembering all the times I haven't been sweet.
No.
No? Oh, you're a multiple sneezer.
You should have heard me at school today.
How many times do you sneeze when you sneeze often?
At school today, I think I got 6.
6, that's good.
Wow.
Did you ever get to 7? I'm afraid of 7.
No, not yet.
I'm not sure something bad might happen if I got to 7. But I often sneeze 5 times. It would be difficult for me not to sneeze.
Yeah.
5 times. I do 5 a lot.
My teacher threatened to kick me out of class if I sneezed.
What can you do? They don't understand. Some people are multiple sneezers.
Exactly.
Okay. And I'm loud as well.
Oh, yeah.
In the car with you if you sneeze.
Yeah, it's an echo. I don't know, but that's the way it is. It's my talent, I guess.
So if you do something good,
yeah,
and you have pride that you've done something good.
Right, no benefit.
And you realize that people think well of you that you did something good, but you don't make a show of it doing something good.
Well, Lopresius basically responded to the nun and said, it doesn't matter what other people think. It doesn't matter what you think.
Yeah.
If you focus on, just don't you take it to yourself and build pride, let it build pride in you. I mean, we can't control what other people think. We shouldn't even try. We shouldn't react, even.
No. Try not to anyway.
Sometimes I can do that. And sometimes I can't. Or don't. I can't really say can't.
Can't and don't, yes.
Yeah, there are different.
I've had some discussion about that before.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop in the middle of page 163 there. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.